Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how are you, my friend?
Mike, I am happy to report no holdouts, no transfer portal action over here. I am 100% committed to that SEC podcast and excited to be talking some college football with you today, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, Shane's holding out. He's still at the Masters, I think. But glad that we got you here, Steve. We'll go a little deep dive on all this Nico madness. We also got some concerning. Well, we talked about it, and now Steve is even more concerned about our friend DJ Lagway. Could be the best player in the country. Will he even suit up? We're going to talk about that. And we're going to go pretty heavy on all that stuff. But before we get into it, got to remind the cousins, Stephen, that we are brought to you by MyBookie. Head on over to MyBookie.ag today if you haven't already and put in that promo code, that SEC, THATSEC. You can see it on the screen there. And if you do that, any first-time customer, Stephen, that puts in that promo code, that SEC over at mybookie.ag, they're willing to give you a 50% instant deposit match today. I think there's even odds on where Nico will go. I wouldn't wager on that right now, if I'm being perfectly honest, but there's going to be some good steals that we're going to pick up throughout the offseason on what you should be betting on when it comes to college football. So now's a good time to take advantage of this offer. But Steven, I know we were just talking about it. They're trying to kill spring football, and they're doing a heck of a job. Any takeaways, and takeaways are even difficult to come up with because none of this is televised. Shout out Texas A&M that'll be the only spring televised game we get. That's this weekend, I believe. So maybe we just do 3 hours on A&M next week. But any takeaways from any and all information that you gleaned over last weekend in the SEC with these spring games?
Yeah, Mike, I think maybe the takeaway here is actually kind of what you said, is that it's been such an unremarkable spring around the conference. And I hate to be boring and suggest that, but there's just not a lot of telling intel that you're getting. I mean, I think some of the biggest intel of the spring has been what's going on with all the quarterbacks. I mean, whether it's been Nico or DJ Lagway or some of the others, Alabama, Ty Simpson, that's kind of been where the focal point is. But I also think it's been hard because a lot of these coaches don't know who's going to be on the roster come later this week. So you're not getting too in-depth into actually, you know, schematics and what you're working on. So I think my biggest takeaway has been, just sort of the uncertainty, the environment that we're in right now with the transfer portal coming up, figuring out where some of the strengths and weaknesses of this team, we're still sorting through that. The one thing I have picked up on, and I know we'll talk transfer needs, is you go down the list of teams, and I came across a quote from Eli Drinkwitz, and I kind of came away with the impression that he must feel pretty good about his roster if he's kind of talking like this. So you kind of read between the lines on some of these coaches to try to figure out where they are right now. And I think that's kind of the takeaway, is that we're just starting to get the first pieces of kind of where and how we feel good about these teams for 2025.
Yeah, and that's not to say that all the spring games are duds. Florida set a not a record, but most attended spring game they've had in like 16 years, with over 50 some odd thousand. I think it was like 56,000 showed up for their game. Tennessee, they had a lot of their stadium that you couldn't access it because they're doing construction, but they had over 30,000 show up. So people are still going to these. But let me ask you this, Stephen, is the fact that these coaches are really kind of hampering what was a great activity in the spring, do you think that negatively affects fandom? Do you think that negatively affects development? Because that was something they always used to talk about, where you'd want to see these young players in a hostile environment for the first time, get them a taste of the fall. Do you think not having these games could hurt the sport in the long term?
I do. I think if I was a fan and I knew that you only had 6 or 7 opportunities to go in the fall, and that spring game was kind of an extra opportunity. It's cheaper. It's probably a little bit easier to get to. You can get some of the family and friends together. I mean, it's a missed opportunity. And you know, you mentioned the attendance at Florida. It's almost like in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, if you don't put these on TV, you get fans to the game. Well, give them something that to watch. Give them some kind of scrimmage, which also plays into, I think, the idea that you and I have talked about a lot, which is let's do some scrimmages. Like, let's set these teams up. Let Florida play, you know, Georgia Tech. Let Tennessee scrimmage Florida State or whoever. I know it's not going to be good on good. I mean, I've been to a lot of I've been to a few NFL preseason games, and I know how this rodeo goes. But I do think, you know, you want opportunities to see what your roster looks like. And we see quotes from coaches all the time when you get to the fall. We're tired of playing each other. We're tired of scrimmaging against each other. We want to hit somebody else. So to have an opportunity in the spring to cater to your fan base, to give fans something to look forward to, give the players a chance to get out there and see in live action against someone else or in a spring game situation, I think they're missing out. So I know there's always going to be really like extremely paranoid coaches, and especially with the portal coming up. But I just think college football's missing something. I mean, what's the buzz been around spring games the last couple of weeks? It's been nothing, right?
It is, and I blame Matt Rhule, Stephen. I mean, this man, in my mind, is never allowed to coach in the SEC after pulling these shenanigans and thinking Nebraska is, apparently, according to him, I mean, they just have a roster full of gems that everybody's waiting to pick apart. Correct me if I'm wrong. That, I mean, they haven't even gone to a meaningful bowl game. I don't even know. When's the last time Nebraska went to a bowl game?
They won the Pinstripe Bowl last year over Boston College.
Come on, Matt Rhule. Nobody watches your pinstripe losers. You know what I mean?
Mike, this gets at the sort of like the paranoia that you and I are talking about. And also, I think if you like rethink the calendar a little bit and you just get rid of the spring portal window, or you move it, or you move how spring football works, you could easily do something here. And to be frank about it too, I also have a really hard time believing that there would be a mass exodus of players just based upon what we saw in a spring game. How many times too have we seen players that were third string who played well in a spring game and they did nothing during the season? Most guys in first stringers, this could be Lenora Sellers. This could be, you know, throw a Jackson Dart from the past, but you know, they're not going to play a full four quarter game. It's spring football. Come on. It's really about building your roster and showcasing your program, which is great for the fans.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Stephen, let's get into it, because again, there's not much we can say about the spring games unless we were there, and I'll just tell you the Tennessee one was travesty is a strong word, but it was not worth the 3-hour drive that I made down there. But I'm going to reach out to a lot of people all across the SEC. Even Shane is doing it, reaching out to people that are going to spring games, and we're going to have those people on to share their insights on what they saw, because otherwise I don't really know how to share what we've seen. But how about this? I mean, the story that has captivated college football the last 72 hours, what have you, Nico leaving Tennessee, giving Nico the boot, however you want to phrase it. Stephen, when you saw this and you saw the dad come out here and say, this is BS, this is just games being played, and then Nico didn't show up to practice on Friday, Tennessee making the decision thereafter to move on from him. What was your thoughts when you saw all this as it played out?
Mike, I have to be honest with you. I thought when that news broke on Thursday, I actually thought by Friday we would have some sort of resolution. And it sort of just goes at the supply and the demand of quarterbacks. Quarterbacks in the spring, there's not many transfers, and there's not many high-profile ones. I think over the last 2 years, Peyton Thorne going from Michigan State to Auburn is probably your most high-profile and most successful one. Most of your quarterback movement happens in the fall, in the fall-winter window. So I think knowing all that, when I saw that news on Thursday, my instinct told me they will figure this out. and Tennessee wouldn't, there's just not another option for Tennessee to go to, even if there's some hard feelings, you work it out for this year because he's a quarterback. I think once Friday got here and Nico missed the practice, I noticed immediately, and I was kind of scoping out the Tennessee message boards, there was an immediate turn. And I think the fan base turned on him. And I think at that point, Josh Heupel made the right call to part ways with him, however you want to word it. I think that was the right move for Tennessee. I did think it was going to get worked out when I first saw it, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, already we're seeing some reaction to it in terms of the over-under. Tennessee's over-under has dropped to 8.5. It was 9.5. What's your thoughts on that? Initially when this all broke, I said, well, I guess pay the guy his money, but I understand maybe there's a little bit more to it than that. If, and I know this is a tough thing to ask, Stephen, but if Tennessee were to make another playoff run this year, which honestly, I didn't think they were going to do with Nico, but let's say they bring him back, they pay him whatever the hell he wanted, and they make a run to the college football playoff, would it have been worth it in your mind to pay Nico if that was the end result?
I think if you make the playoff, I think it's worth it. And I think you also get into a situation like it's probably just a 1 year deal anyways, because what he redshirted his first year, played last year, would play 2025. So it'd be going probably to the NFL draft, or he just moves on to another team. I thought Tennessee probably would not have been in my playoff projections with Nico. I think they would have been right there at 9-3, 10-2 bubble. I think it's going to be really hard for this team unless they can go out and get another quarterback in the portal, which is the big question in all this. The game at Alabama, which you'd probably put into the swing category just a few weeks ago, I think you probably put it solid Alabama. Florida, probably a toss-up, probably pretty solid Florida now. That's not even taking into account the game against Georgia. Also, pretty tricky game against Oklahoma, too. So all of a sudden, I think Tennessee slides from playoff contender to probably being either somewhere in the back half of the top 25 or closer to that 7-8 win range right now.
Mm-hmm. And then vice versa, Stephen, if kicking Nico off the team, whatever you want to say, and Tennessee goes, let's say 7-5, you think it was worth it to give him the boot?
I think there's kind of a case to be made that it's the worst thing that Tennessee could have done for 2025 specifically, but maybe in the long run, it's better for the program, as weird as that sounds. And the reason why I go there is we've had some inklings in the transfer portal era where there was some, let's enter the portal, let's negotiate a new deal. Someone else on the team gets the same idea, and you play this cycle of you're constantly negotiating contracts. I think team chemistry becomes a problem at that point. And so I think you ran a real danger of not only that, but also was Nico worth a $2 million raise based on the way he played last year? I know Carson Beck's getting 4. Maybe you could argue for a small bump. I don't know that I would have gone to Carson Beck territory. So I think it's a setback right now for Tennessee, but I think in the long run, I think in order to run the program the way that Josh Heupel wants and sort of set your values, essentially, it's the right move. And you can't have one player to miss a practice and then ask for more money. And at the same time, Mike, could you imagine what the reaction would have been in early September if he struggled against Georgia? And after all this, and to throw like 2 interceptions against Georgia, the fan base would have immediately turned on him even more. It just kind of came to the point of it felt like no return there for Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're 100% there with, quite frankly, I think it's unfair to ask him for some money back, but they have paid him way more than he has delivered. And you got to remember, he was actually even getting paid as a senior in high school. It goes back that far because you were allowed to make money as a California high school athlete. He got paid the first year. He was MVP of the bowl game. But other than that, he made not a significant snap other than that I can recall. So he got paid multiple years for at the end of the day, being a mid-level SEC player. Now, I certainly think it's easy to sit here and pick apart his game and what he hasn't done. What's your thoughts on this, Steve? Because I'm seeing it universally from Tennessee fans, which it's no surprise, but I'm seeing it from other fans too. You know, just the common fan that I think is totally against guys like this holding out and demanding more money. But there's a popular belief that Tennessee on the field will be better without Nico. Honestly, I think that's kind of crazy, given where we're at in the calendar and how much time. Now, we don't know who they're going to add. We'll get to that in a little bit here. But is there any chance in your mind that Tennessee is better today without Nico on the roster?
That I think it's hard to make a case that they're better. For all of his bad advice that he was getting, for all of maybe the internal tension that was there at Tennessee, Mike, you have a quarterback that was top 10 in the SEC, certainly top 25 somewhere in college football. Those are really hard to find in the spring. And so Tennessee got to the playoff last year on defense and running the ball. And they can do that again this year, but it's going to require a lot of those pieces to step up because of all the personnel departures. So a lot of their hopes this year were saying, Nico's going to take that next step forward. It's going to help overcome the losses of Dylan Sampson and some of those guys on defense. So I think it was pretty reasonable to expect him to raise his game this year. And now you're asking two pretty inexperienced quarterbacks to carry more of the load. Maybe there's the defense and run game can pick up the slack. It sort of, you know, galvanizes the team. I buy that, but man, you're talking about a top 25 quarterback you just lost in the portal. Unless you can replace him with someone else of that value, it's hard to argue Tennessee's a better team.
Right. And again, it's probably unfair, but who said life is fair, Steven? I was at the spring game and Jake Merklinger, George McIntyre, I thought McIntyre looked better. Again, it's very, very difficult to read into all that. It's all scripted. So many guys are out, but neither one of them looked anywhere near as good as Nico that I have seen in person. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But let's get into... Oh, wait, I did want to ask you this, Steven.
Hey, Mike, I did have one thing I wanted to mention on that with the quarterbacks. Uh-huh. I do think there is... Let's just hypothetically play a game where Tennessee doesn't add somebody. I would be willing to bet that both those quarterbacks are much more prepared when we come to play Syracuse and East Tennessee State in the first 2 weeks of the season. I'm not saying Tennessee is going to beat Georgia, but I think given the friendly nature of Josh Heupel's offense and his track record of quarterbacks, they now have months to get ready for the season. And if there's anything, if I was a Tennessee fan, that would give me some confidence is if you don't add another starter caliber quarterback, I think Josh Heupel will figure something out to at least make this team not the bottom won't completely fall out offensively, if that makes sense.
No, I'm right there with you. But it's so difficult because they're breaking in new offensive linemen, new running backs, new receivers. Nico was going to be a steadying force. And now you don't even have that. But before we get into potential replacements or portal additions, final thing I wanted to ask you about all this. What if Steven Lassen had the power to fix all this, to ensure this doesn't happen, not just Tennessee, but across the SEC and across college football, what steps do you think need to be taken to where we can't, you know, spring football is it as simple as getting rid of the second portal to where this can't happen?
I think that's a huge part of it. I also think you could argue some sort of contract or binding agreement, and legally there's a lot there to work through. And even then, that's been not necessarily the most binding thing, as we've seen in this case and some other scenarios too. But I think you have to remove the spring window and spring football. Like, you almost have to untangle the two, because how do you have a practice for 2025 not knowing who's going to be on your roster the next week. And we're still in the situation too. The House settlement could pass and no one knows how many scholarship players they're going to be allowed. It could be 85. It could be 105. Roster limits are still a question. So I think just do one portal window and then have some sort of binding agreement, like contracts, legally, however that gets worked out. Then you get into a period of stability, plus some pretty common sense like transfer rules too. I like the idea of transferring once for free, once if your head coach leaves, and once if you're a graduate. That's three times. I think that sort of brings some structure to the chaos.
Mm-hmm. And I heard Shane and Terry on the radio today on Three Owner. He says that none of this is going to get fixed until they blow up the system. And I think what he's driving at here is they're trying to stick to this amateurism model, and you're fooling yourself if you think this is, it's not been amateur athlete, I don't think, for about 20 years, 30 years. So I think that's the key. I mean, I don't think we can get to any of this in the current format that we're trying to fit it into, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I apologize for getting like super nerdy with this, but like, you know, the NCAA, it basically, like, all your presidents and all your everybody who's in charge of the schools make the NCAA. Like, there's not just some, you know, group over here that schools join. The schools are part, they formed the NCAA, they've made up the NCAA. They did not want to relent on the NIL space. And so that's why you sort of see all this chaos state by state, all these things that have happened. In order to bring some structure, you know, somebody's going to have to give in a little bit here. Like, you're going to have to sort of go to the ground floor and either just acknowledge that, hey, players are employees, whether you fight for some sort of antitrust exemption, whatever it is, there's going to have to be acknowledgement that the days that are the 1990s, early 2000s, where it was just scholarship and all that, it's way gone. It's a different era. Figure out and start working back from there. And I think a lot of those things are doable, and come up with a set of rules that are enforceable, that you're not going to get sued into oblivion every time you pass something. So the system needs drastic change. And probably the only way to start is just some acknowledgement that, yeah, it's not the old days. It's not just students anymore. It's a business, and you have to mm-hmm. figure out to work from there.
Well, it's time to say aloha to old Nico, Steve. And again, if you don't know, I don't know where you've been, but he can't transfer to another SEC school, at least not this year. He could technically, but he'd have to sit out the year. So he's not going to do that. So he's kind of dead to us. I only care about SEC guys on this show. But so let's look at Tennessee moving forward, Steven. Andy, guys that they could add in the portal that would be, you know, fit the system, that would be, you have to believe Tennessee's got about $2.5 million. All of a sudden it came out from under a rock and they got 2.5 or possibly more $1 million to spend on a quarterback. And again, I probably should have led with this, Steven. I asked Steven to have this ready, but I did forget to say, you know, I don't even care if a guy's in the portal. You know what I mean? Because we all know tampering, that's a real thing, and I don't know that they would enforce it. And now we got to find out if Tennessee's willing to take that step to get someone. Are there any players, Steven, whether they're in the portal or not, that you think would be a great addition to Tennessee that would fit what they're trying to do, that maybe could be as good, if not better, than old Nico?
Mike, I think if you're a Tennessee fan, I think there should be some positive news that came out on Monday, and that is Gio Lopez hitting the portal from South Alabama. I think he's maybe one of the better group of five quarterbacks. It looks like he's going to North Carolina, but I think the reason why that's important is it's like the first domino. And I think what it may tell us is that the quarterback market in the portal may not be as thin as we expect. And so if North Carolina can go out and pluck a pretty good G5 starter, Tennessee should be able to. When you look at the options beyond that in the portal, Mike, it's pretty thin. I mean, you're talking about someone like Brendan Sullivan, who's played at Northwestern. He's played at Iowa. I don't know if he's a great fit for the system. He's got experience, though. Dylan Risk over at UCF. He started a little bit at UCF last year. Probably not a bad fit for the system, but also I don't know if there's a ton of upside there to be a high level SEC starter. And of course, there is old SEC friend Jaden Rashada just waiting out there.
Don't you say it, Steven.
I was going to make the case that maybe he's Tennessee's like sleeper agent. Like he went to Florida, got them in trouble, goes to Georgia, maybe goes and picks up a few things and then goes to Tennessee and just unloads the secrets of the SEC. I mean,
no. I don't think they want any part of that unless he's willing to sue Kirby Smart too for some. Who knows what? Maybe he could sue all these. If he comes to Tennessee, he's going to end up suing Josh Heupel. That would be my thinking. But I don't. How about this, Stephen? This, you know, it's dangerous to believe internet rumors, but let's just believe them for a second here. The popular one that I see, and I have no clue if this guy's even interested, but Kansas State quarterback Avery Johnson. Have you thought about that? And how would he fit if Tennessee? I don't even know. You know, he's committed to Kansas State, sure. Then they throw $3.5 million. What if they just gave him whatever Nico said he wanted? Let's give him $4 million. If they could get him, how would he fit in the Josh Heupel offense, do you think?
Mike, I like Avery Johnson. I don't love the, you know, sub like 60% completion rate. I think very much a work in progress as a passer. Dynamic runner, though. Exciting type of player. At Kansas State. In fact, I think he might be the one of the Big 12's best quarterbacks coming into the season. If Tennessee could pull that off, I mean, you're talking about like from a replacement standpoint, Tennessee would be in good shape offensively. I don't know that he's necessarily a better fit, but you talk about like giving up a, you know, B plus player, whatever, and you're getting probably somebody whose upside is just as great. So if Tennessee could pull that off, I think they'd be in good shape. I also I'm just going to speculate here on some quarterbacks if we can. You know, guys like Josh Hoover at TCU, I would call him up and just see. Someone like a Noah Fifita at Arizona. His buddy, T. McMillan, is going to the NFL. He's a receiver. Would he be interested in leaving Arizona? Haynes King out at Georgia Tech. They've got a pretty good backup, and Aaron Filo. Haynes King is last chance as a senior. He's really improved at Georgia Tech. Also, and Alex Golish, this quarterback, Byron Brown, is pretty good. He's going to be one of the better ones in the American this year. So, I mean, I know, just having some fun and speculating, Tennessee's got a good chunk of cash sitting over there. And if any one of those quarterbacks, any one of those four that we mentioned, if they could convince them, Tennessee would be in pretty good shape at quarterback, I think.
One guy you didn't mention, how about old TJ Finley? I don't even know if he's eligible. Didn't he get arrested or something like that? But here's another one that a lot of people, I have no clue this guy has any interest, but Illinois quarterback Luke Altmyer, he was at Ole Miss for a little while, and I just watched him in the bowl game, and he looked pretty solid against South Carolina. How would he potentially fit in a Tennessee offense?
I think he'd be a heck of a quarterback, Mike. He's one of the better ones coming back in the Big Ten this year. And I think what you'd like to see is from 2023 to 2024, he got a lot better. Barry Lunney, of course, is the offensive coordinator there, former Arkansas assistant. So arm, mobility, improvement, experience, I think he'd be a good fit for someone like Tennessee.
Yeah, and I think that is correct me if I'm wrong, Steven, but I believe he's in his last year. I think that's the type of a guy that Tennessee wants. I don't know anything about Gio Lopez, but I did see he's a younger player. I don't think that would fit what Tennessee's trying to do because they have some young quarterbacks, even though he has played much more than any of the quarterbacks on Tennessee's roster. And then they have a 2026 kid, the five-star that's committed. So adding another young quarterback to the mix, I think it makes way more sense. Again, all this money, come to the SEC. That's kind of where I'm at with this, I think.
I think that's where I would go to, like a one-year rental almost at quarterback, because you know you've got maybe your next star coming in next season. And you also run the possibility that maybe McIntyre just ends up being like pretty good over the season. He develops and he takes a step forward and you get two talented quarterbacks next year. But I think there are options for Tennessee. And I think that with that pile of cash, you can convince someone. And in a one-year situation where you're trying to capitalize on your value, not knowing maybe some NFL prospects. Some of these guys we mentioned may not be high picks. $2 to $3 million is hard to turn down, and an opportunity to play in the SEC behind a fan base that gets, you know, that's crazy about, you know, supporting a quarterback now. And, you know, the opportunity to be a potential 9-10 win team, be a playoff contender if dominoes fall right for Tennessee. It's a pretty enticing opportunity.
Yeah, and the only thing, I don't want to blow up Georgia Tech's offense or anything, but getting Haynes King would be kind of, it'd be interesting because he nearly signed with Tennessee. He picked Texas A&M over Tennessee, so that could be a little full circle. It was Jim Chaney and Pruitt that was recruiting him, though, not Josh Heupel. So, again, doesn't necessarily fit, but, you know, he's another one that I think could, if they could get a player of his caliber, heck, I think he might even be better than Nico.
Mike, it's funny. This is a good opportunity for us to beat up on Jimbo Fisher a little bit, right? I mean, think about how good Haynes King has been since he's been at Georgia Tech. He was beat up last year and still threw 14 touchdowns to 2 picks. He missed a bunch of time. But in 2023, 27 touchdowns. And he was, like I said, he's been an upper half quarterback in the ACC the last 2 years when he's been healthy and compared to where he was at Texas A&M. So good coaching, Mike, can make a big difference there.
Hey, shout out Cousin Rick. Love the show and supporting y'all. Haynes King would be interesting. Great kid. Aggies beat the hell out of the Hogs baseball. Thank you, Cousin Rick. We appreciate you, buddy. He's a big Aggie down there, so he knows Haynes King well. Wish it would have worked out for him at A&M, but certainly, yeah, he's gotten the most out of his career. And I will always know Haynes King for Mario Cristobal not taking the knee and Haynes King leading Georgia Tech back to man, what, that was glorious, wasn't it?
Oh, not only that, Haynes King is a tough kid. I mean, he is a tough individual. I mean, he was beat up last year, I think playing basically with a shoulder or arm that was less than full strength, it appeared, just from watching the games. And to be out there doing everything he can, the game against Georgia at the end of the year. You mentioned the crazy ending against Miami 2 years ago. I mean, he has racked up a lot of impressive moments in just 2 years at Georgia Tech. And, you know, again, senior going into his last year, I think Georgia Tech's a sleeper in the ACC. But Tennessee's a much more high profile destination for players.
It is, Stephen, but you know, this whole situation, if we're being honest, even if you like laughing at Tennessee, which I see in the comments, you guys are having a ball at Tennessee choking this situation away, but it stinks, Stephen. Quite frankly, it stinks, and the best way, if you stink, which I know you guys don't, but if you did, the best way to get over it is Shop Mando, shopmando.com, promo code SEC, Stephen, to get you $5 off a starter pack over at shopmando.com. What is this starter pack, you're asking? It's a solid stick deodorant. It's cream tube deodorant and two products of your choosing for free with free shipping over at shopmando. Don't forget promo code SEC for $5 off your entire order. And that's 40% off the entire product, Stephen. Cannot beat it. Unlike Nico's portal strategy, you cannot beat it. Clinically proven to block odor all day and control it for 72 hours. And oh yeah, baking soda free. I hear Nico's dad loves baking soda. To just let you know where you're at, if you join with old Shop Mando, you are the opposite of the Nico family. You know what?
I think Nico won the Mando Play of the Year for that ending against Arkansas, right?
Yeah, never. That's going to be his damn legacy at Tennessee. Ran out of bounds with a damn game on the line. Come on. Oh, that's two quarterbacks from Tennessee in a row that have done that.
What is it with Tennessee quarterbacks and like strange endings? I mean, it stinks. You know, that's why they need the Mando. Our friends over at Mando could have hooked him up, could have prevented such in-game disasters there.
Word to the wise for Josh Heupel. If any of these portal quarterbacks have any film of them running out of bounds with a game on the line, do not add them. Just don't do it.
Man, it's funny to think about that too, because Josh Heupel's so good at quarterback development, right? Like, why would those guys have such in-game disasters there? So yeah, watch the tape. Make sure nobody's just lobbing the ball out of bounds as time expired instead of throwing it to the end zone.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I also, we can hit on a bunch of more teams now. I get some people, you know, tired of the Nico saga here, but I asked Steven, you know, where would this rank among most impactful guys if they got up today, took their ball and went home? Who would that hurt the most in the SEC? And I said, feel free, Steven, feel free to put your God's gift of football, Arch Manning, like that. That was the example I set out to Steven. If Arch were to leave Texas, even though we've not seen him really take a meaningful snap, I know Steven would be heartbroken, and they may even stop giving away the Heisman Trophy if Arch didn't play next year, because we've already probably given it to him.
We're going to cancel the season, Mike. That's
just... Right, right. We'll just cancel. It'll be COVID 2.0 here, except they'll cancel it for real because Arch can't play. But how many players you got here, you know, about how negatively it would affect if their player just up and left and pulled a Nico here?
Mike, I came up with 10. I came up with the top 10.
Perfect.
And I got some extras, as always, to make sure we cover all of our bases here. But I will give you a warning. Pretty quarterback heavy here.
Right.
I think these rankings are pretty interesting.
Okay. Yeah. So let's go with your let's work the way up. So starting with 10.
I comboed two players here because they kind of fit the same parameters here. Austin Simmons and Gunnar Stockton. So they're first-year starters. They're breakout candidates. Both of these teams, high expectations for both. Both teams also expecting them to, certainly in the case of Georgia, be a national championship contender. Ole Miss, a lot of playoff hopes as well still. So, you know, if Gunnar Stockton doesn't start, there's still talent at Georgia, but there's clearly a drop-off in what we know about these quarterbacks right now. And Austin Simmons, just kind of the biggest, I think, source of optimism for Ole Miss right now as they try to be that playoff team in 2025.
Interesting. Oh, hey, one thing I wanted to ask you, Steven. Again, I don't have any clue. I wouldn't imagine Tulane's got $4 or $5 million, whatever the hell Nico's dad's asking for. But let's say maybe he's down on his options and he has to go somewhere. Obviously, I'm not trying to make light of the TJ Finley situation, but if Tulane, who according to Pete Nakos on Three, who broke this whole thing, he says that Tulane is involved perhaps with Nico and some of the others that have been attached. I mean, they'd rather have Gio Lopez, you know what I mean? So let's say that Nico goes to Tulane. And the only reason I care, again, they're dead to me when they're not there anymore, but Tulane plays Ole Miss this year. Let's assume, which we shouldn't do this, but let's assume Nico goes to Tulane. How dangerous of a game all of a sudden is that for their outstanding coach, John Summerall, playing in Oxford?
Mike, I think it's a dangerous game with or without Nico, because I think Tulane might be the team to beat in the American this year, largely because of John Summerall. They are well-coached. They have some losses on both sides of the ball, much like every G5 team, but they've reloaded through the portal. And I could break down their quarterback battle for you, but I'll save that for the SEC After Dark podcast the next week. But he would probably be the starter, essentially, and would be an upgrade over what they have. So, yeah, it gets more dangerous for Ole Miss, for sure. Should also note, too, that's also what interests me about this whole Nico saga. Where's the leverage? UCLA? I mean, at this point, if North Carolina gets Gio Lopez, is it down to UCLA for Nico or Tulane or some sort of wild card? We don't know. I don't see a ton of leverage here for him.
I thought he was going to Texas Tech and all the money they have, but apparently they're not interested either. And Deion's come out, obviously, Colorado. So, yeah, I think this has just been bungled from the start, to be honest with you.
I totally agree. I think it'll... UCLA makes the most sense, but when you already X off the whole entire SEC, which would have also made sense to enter the portal back in the first window if you wanted to have full options to, there's just not a ton of leverage. And that's also smart on Tennessee's part for knowing that, hey, there's not a ton of spots available. You're our starter. We don't need to budge because there's really not a ton of places you can go to get a pay raise at this point.
Hey, what are your thoughts on this comment from Zach? Austin Simmons is better than Jackson Dart. That may be a little crazy. I mean, Jackson Dart may go in the first round of the NFL draft here in a couple of weeks, but just overall thoughts. Do you think he could be, again, I think this year, that's asking way, way, way too much. But I have heard, Stephen, that you know, there were quarterbacks interested in Ole Miss this off season, and Kiffin and company shut that down and said, no, we're all ahead on Austin Simmons. We love this guy. And there has even been some chatter that they've been telling people that Austin Simmons will be better than Jackson Dart. I don't think they meant, again, immediately, but I think they meant ceiling wise and all that. What's your thoughts on the ceiling for Austin Simmons?
I think it's pretty high. I think it's asking a lot for him to be better than Jackson Dart last year. Maybe even 2023 Jackson Dart. But if you told me in 2026, 2027, he was like all SEC, better career numbers than Jackson Dart, I don't think that would surprise me. Our sample size on him is pretty small, to be honest with you, but it's hard to not be impressed with what he did in that game against Georgia. You know, just coming in cold, high profile spot, and just calmly delivered them down the field. And you can see the tools, like the accuracy, the arm, everything he brings to the table. So there is a ton of upside there. The question is going to be just how fast he reaches that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Stephen, next on your list of most valuable players to potentially, well, again, none of these guys are leaving, hopefully. I mean, they might. We might have to be doing a lot of emergency podcasts. But if they pulled an Eco and up and left, who would it most affect here?
I've got Ryan Williams from Alabama at 9. You know, maybe I'm thinking about it. Maybe I should have the two quarterbacks ahead of him. But I just think, you know, with Ryan Williams, explosive, dynamic playmaker in his first season, you take him away. You know, you have Bernard, you have Isaiah Horton, the Miami transfer. But you're certainly missing a key weapon and a key dynamic piece of that offense who is only bound to get better in 2025.
Mm-hmm. So clearly, having Ryan Williams here, that lets you know Stephen has no respect for these Alabama quarterbacks, which Ryan Grubb says Ty Simpson will be the starter if they had a game today, which it's a clever way to put it out there, but also be like, well, we don't have a game. You know, things can change, all that, the other. We've kind of talked about it a little bit, Stephen, but while we're here on Alabama, what any takeaway from Ty Simpson technically being named the starter today?
I was a little surprised they said that, just because most it's to the coach's advantage to keep the battle open into the fall so that way you don't have some attrition, even though somebody can't transfer from SEC school to SEC school. Let's just hypothetically say if Austin Mack entered the portal, I think he would find a pretty robust market for his services among teams that need a quarterback. But I think that's kind of been where this has been heading all along. Russell's upside to me is probably the most intriguing piece. And I think as we start thinking about the fall, how far does he progress? I think that'll be telling because at this point, it seems like to me it's Simpson versus maybe Russell growing into the job at some point this year.
Right. And what it tells me, Stephen, is just that, you know, they always say the players know. I would say that Ty Simpson is just so far ahead of the other quarterbacks that they already know that he is in command. That doesn't mean the other ones are bad, but there's no need to play games if everybody knows who the best. I mean, you're out there on the practice field. It's clear as day. That's what it tells me. And again, that doesn't mean the other quarterbacks are bad. I certainly don't think they're bad, but maybe Ty Simpson is just taking his game to another level and he's ready for it. You know.
That might be the takeaway, Mike, is there a chance that Ty Simpson has just been so impressive and has just elevated his game that he's beat out two pretty talented quarterbacks here? That seems like it could be a pretty, I think, reasonable take on this story. And you know, to mention Ryan Williams, and one of the reasons why I had him down at 9, it's, I think if we're just doing best player list, he's much higher. My only like reason for having him a little bit lower is I actually think that their quarterback situation is going to be just fine. I whether it's Simpson, Russell, or if Austin Mack wins the job, largely because I believe in Ryan Grubb, but also if you throw Bernard and Horton and some of the other weapons they have coming back, I think there's a good foundation offensively that they can maybe be better in the passing game this season than they were last year.
Mm-hmm. All right. So who's number 8 on your list, Steven?
Not a best player list, but I got to go Dylan Stewart. So if we're talking best players, he'd be a lot higher. But I think in situations like this, quarterbacks hold so much value to your team that I'm pretty quarterback heavy the rest of the way here. But I had to get Dylan Stewart in here somewhere because South Carolina loses Kennard. They have some losses on the defensive interior, and he was so good as a freshman last year. And you think about what another offseason of development in an SEC weight room and understanding the whole game better in year two. So Dylan Stewart, for sure, one of my preseason All-Americans, and I've got him eighth on this list of like most players that'd be difficult to replace.
Yeah, and the fact that he came in as a true freshman and played at such an incredible level. I mean, if he continues to develop, buddy, watch out for him. You know what?
Oh, yeah. And it's also why it's incumbent on South Carolina to hopefully, whether it's was it Brian Thomas or some of the other kids they have coming in this offseason, to find somebody who can help take that pressure off him. I mean, he's going to face a lot more attention this year. Kyle Kennard's gone to the NFL. You got to find that other guy. But I think just in general, the upside here is so high. And for a guy that was that impressive as a freshman, you can only envision the big things coming in year two.
Mm-hmm. All right, so who's next on your list?
We've reached the quarterback portion of the list here. Let's go with Taylen Green at seven. I think everything about Arkansas this year from an upside perspective really relies on Taylen Green taking that big-time next step. Like his skill set, the dynamic all-around ability, what he can do and carry a team, if he can take that to another level. You know, I know Arkansas's backups, you know, with some of the other ones they have there, not bad, but Taylen Green could be pretty special player. So I went with Taylen Green at seven on this list. Mike, is that too high?
I honestly think it might not be high enough. The things I'm hearing about Taylen Green this spring, very, very coveted guy if he were to enter the portal. I'll just put it that way. But remember, Steve, remember when there was all this panic? Arkansas's losing this guy to Ole Miss. Arkansas's losing to this guy. One of them's banged up. Well, quite frankly, almost all of them were banged up or maybe not, didn't quite realize their potential. And that's the headlines. And it's Lane Kiffin trolling and all this. And I said, well, wait a second. What everybody's missing here is they kept the quarterback. And it's all behind closed doors. You know, none of this is public, but you don't know what his demands were. And if you were to tell me, would you rather have Patrick Kudus, Jalen Brown, I think is his name, and Luke Haas, or would you rather have Taylen Green? I mean, you're a damn fool if you would take those three players over a healthy Taylen Green. I mean, Taylen Green, he might, this might sound crazy, Steve, but he might very well be the best player in the SEC next year. I think he's got that talent in him. He was banged up last year. He's going into year two into Bobby Petrino. And Bobby Petrino's had these guys before, Steven. People thought Lamar Jackson couldn't play. Then all of a sudden, I mean, he took college football over. He goes to the NFL. They didn't think he could play. He took NFL over. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not calling him Lamar Jackson, but I think he's got that level of ability in him. So I think Taylen Green, It may not show itself because, again, it's not like he's on a horrible team or anything like that, but I just think Arkansas is going to be at a disadvantage most SEC games when it comes to pure talent, but he is the great equalizer perhaps for the Razorback. So, yeah, I think if we did this list in December, I think Taylen Green, there's a good chance, even if he stays healthy, he'd be higher on your list.
I think the equalizer word is exactly what I was thinking, is because year two under Petrino with that skill set and what we saw in the first year through the SEC, if he can take a step forward, Petrino figures out even more ways to deploy his all around dynamic ability. There is talented as KJ Jackson and some of the other, you know, Arkansas quarterbacks at backup. There's no replacing that. And yeah, they do have a lot to replace at receiver. They've got to figure out the offensive line, but I would be sure if I was on the Arkansas NIL team, Taylen Green is the one guy I want to make sure we can keep, because you can find receivers in the portal, but you can't find a quarterback that through the first year and now potentially year two could be that dynamic.
He could be this year's Jaden Daniels. And when I say that, I don't mean win the Heisman and of course he could, but I just mean, you know, leads them obviously in passing and also maybe their biggest threat in the run game as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it sounds like crazy to even go there, but you start thinking about the opportunities that he will have. Like, he's going to play Notre Dame. He's going to play Tennessee, A&M, LSU, Texas, like spotlight games. I mean, it's not crazy. Like, every year you always see one or two guys who go from like preseason mid pack or so and end up making a kind of a surprise run at some point to be a Heisman Trophy candidate. And a lot of that is they are so dynamic in carrying the team, which definitely fits with Taylen Green. So he's probably high on my list of like guys I'm just really excited to watch in 2025.
Mm-hmm. All right. So who's next on your list, Stephen?
John Mateer at Oklahoma. And a lot of this is Oklahoma was just so bad offensively and so had so much bad luck with injuries and all that. Now, with a much more stable offensive system with Ben Arbuckle calling the plays, they have a proven quarterback in John Mateer. They went big to go get him, and now it's time for him to deliver. Michael Hawkins was pretty solid, but I think there's a difference in where this offense could go with John Mateer, and that is why he's number six on the list.
Yeah, I love this one, Steven. Again, I can make the case for him not being high enough, but again, he just got there. Nothing runs like a Mateer, so I've been told, Steven. So, I don't have anything to bicker about, but we'll see his transition to Oklahoma. Obviously the plan is always for a guy to come in and go off and then go to the NFL. But I think he potentially has 2 years to play at Oklahoma. I think in 2 years he could be perhaps the best quarterback in the SEC. They suffered an injury at receiver recently, so they can't shake that injury bug for some reason. But I think this is a hell of a selection. I think all the buzz is legit with John Mateer this offseason in Norman.
I think if you just watched highlights that were posted to social media, John Mateer might win the spring Heisman because he's been so awesome in this clip. It's getting me fired up for to see what this Oklahoma offense looks like in 2025.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, man, all these great quarterbacks, I can't wait to see who's next on your list.
Mike, I got Garrett Nussmeier. I debated having him a little bit lower, not because of just talent or how good he is. It's just that they've got Michael Van Buren behind him. But also, I think if you're LSU and your expectation is to make the playoff challenge for the SEC title, you need Garrett Nussmeier because he could be a Heisman finalist this year, preseason All-American. So I just think there's a different level right now. Van Buren's really talented, but Nussmeier is just on a different tier right now. So I've got him at number five.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of cliche, but I think it's true with him. He's like a coach on the field. Just his ability to get everyone else lined up. They're having some transition on the offensive line. Apparently their defensive line dominated the spring game that they had over the weekend. So I think it'll be paramount for him to help those guys along and help a relatively, retooled receiving core and some young running backs. So I think his value to that program is even more than his physical ability and what he'll actually do stat-wise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Is five too high or too low? You think that's about right for him on this list?
I think you nailed it because you got Michael Van Buren there who he flashed. Not to say he could step in and be the next Garrett Nussmeier immediately, but I think that's fair. I like that. I could see Nussmeier being a little bit higher, but I think I know who you got up there, so I'll let it slide, Steven. I'll let it slide.
So at four, I've got the one and only Mr. Excitement, Diego Pavia. I mean, come on. He's Vanderbilt football. He led Vanderbilt to an upset over Alabama, had him within striking range over the one over Texas. If everything about Vanderbilt this season, as much as the defense has improved, a ton of additions through the portal on the offensive line, Seth Alexander back at running back. There's a pretty good foundation, but Vanderbilt doesn't make a bowl game or think higher than that if Diego Pavia is playing for somebody else in 2025.
Right. And Steven, I know we're ranking the most valuable players to hit the portal. The most number one most valuable to the show, Steven, number one cousin, if he hit the portal, we'd all be screwed. That's Cousin JR, Steven. He's back again. He's just gifted 5 memberships. This time, Clark, Joshua, Schuler, Hurt. I hope I didn't butcher that too bad. Braden, Thompson, and Double D. What a name. You've all been gifted memberships. Welcome to the family, courtesy of the legend, JR. Thank you so much, JR. We were missing you in the last 55 minutes, but I should have never doubted. I knew as soon as you saw we were online, I'm sure you jumped on here.
He wasn't negotiating with those those Big Ten guys, was he?
I think he may have been. He may have been considering pulling a Nico, but I bet JR's got better guidance. Yeah, right here. He says he was coaching his daughter's T-ball game. So he was being a good dad, unlike Nico's dad. He's the opposite of Nico's dad, in my opinion. I'll just say that.
Oh, man. Yeah, Nico needs better. He needs some better agents for sure. Yeah.
He's JR as his agent. Right? What is he doing? He can get everything he wanted.
Get Cousin Shane, he'd get like lifetime Cracker Barrel.
All right, Steven, who's next on the list here?
We're down to the last 3. No suspense here, Mike. They're all quarterbacks. They're all American candidates. And let's go with Lenora Sellers at 3. The only reason he's not higher is, well, they've got Aaron Nolan, who I think pretty highly of as the backup this season, or at least he's on the depth chart. We'll see if he's the 2 or the 3. But everything about like South Carolina, you think about the progression from the start of the season to midway to the end of the year. Sellers was just a much better quarterback at each of those points. Then we start thinking about where could this go in 2025? He could end up being the best quarterback in college football. The upside is tremendous. Wherever Mike Shula can help direct his career, can they get better receiver play? Dylan Stewart is special, but Lenora Sellers can carry this team almost like he did last year to the college football playoff.
This one, I don't know how you're splitting hairs here, Steven, but Lenora Sellers, man. He basically put the team on his back and beat Clemson last year. So, if that Sellers shows up, I think you may be regretting having him. I mean, 3 is pretty dang good. So I'm not sitting here saying, you're blasting him or anything. But I think these Gamecocks are gonna be upset with you, Steven, putting him all the way at number 3.
I think it's a vote of confidence for their quarterback depth chart. I mean, you got somebody like Aaron Nolan tossing some passes behind Sellers. If he was to go like miss a game or two, I think you feel pretty good. But let me tell you my number 2 option here, because I wrestled with 2 and 3.
One second, Steven. I'm sorry to cut you off, but you did say Mike Shula. So I wanted to share this. I shared this earlier today. I mean, if you could see that on the screen, I thought for a brief moment that Will Muschamp was back at South Carolina. Mike Shula looks exactly like Will Muschamp. And I shared that, and apologies to the Gamecocks. I got very many of them upset, so I apologize for that. But I thought that was too good not to share.
Mike, he does. Like, even just looking from afar, he looks exactly like Will. I would have guessed that's Will Muschamp if I just happened to see that on my screen. Mike, that's like 13 days too late there. That's like a good April Fool's joke, right?
Okay, I'm sorry, Steve. Go continue on number 2.
DJ Lagway. I mean, everything about Florida, like going back to last season, kind of same thing as Sellers, that late season run, Lagway was so instrumental in beating Ole Miss, beating LSU, crushing Florida State. And you go into 2025 and your backup is still, at least right now, Aiden Warner, the well-traveled Harrison Bailey. The drop-off there, if Lagway has to miss some time, is pretty steep. So I just think everything for Florida resides on DJ Lagway. Yes, the running backs are good. The offensive line's good. Defense should be better. But, man, if Lagway was to leave or not play, that's pretty devastating, I think, for Florida's chances of being a playoff team.
Right. And again, I know there's other issues with, the revenue sharing and these athletic departments not necessarily knowing where all the money's coming from, this, that, and the other. But I can't recall, Steven. I could be wrong. Maybe you could correct me, but I can't recall a program essentially saying, well, let's keep the coach because we cannot afford to lose this quarterback. I mean, I don't think that was the sole decision, but I think that was a big part of bringing back Billy Napier. DJ Lagway loves him some Billy Napier. And if Billy Napier was fired, I don't think DJ would be here. So, can you think of another program that may have made such a big decision largely due to a quarterback?
Mike, nothing this high profile for sure. It's just a totally different era where you're looking at the financial aspect of it. I mean, you could also maybe not necessarily the same thing, but I think Oklahoma's probably going to wrestle with that if they don't end up being very good this year, because they're going to have to pay, I'm sure, Mateer, or he may transfer or opt for more money, whatever it is. A coach's buyout could be 20, 30 million, and to, retain all your players, you're looking at a much smaller sum of money. So that's one of the new intricacies of this, not a high profile thing like we've seen with Florida and Lagway.
So let's just get it over with, Steven. We already know where you're going for number one.
Mike, it is God's gift to college football. Arch Manning. Arch Manning. Mike, I think Texas is maybe the front runner to win the national championship this year. And the patience of the last 2 years for Arch Manning, waiting his turn behind Quinn Ewers, Sarkisian, building him up. If he was to leave, just a devastating impact it would have on Texas, because I don't think they'd be contending for the national championship. So I think if you're a national championship contender and you've got the best quarterback of college football, I think that's worth the number one spot in this list.
And where would you put Nico in terms of this 1-10 leaving Tennessee? Any ballpark of where you would insert that?
I was going to say, what about after Nussmeier at 5 and just before Mateer at 6. Does that seem about right?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And you could even make the case for a little bit higher. Now we'll see if they add another quarterback. Heupel has said, the plan is, because they only got two quarterbacks on scholarship and one of them's literally never played in college football. The other one's been there for a year. So it's, it's a dicey proposition, but they got to add somebody. But I think that's fair and maybe even higher, whether Tennessee fans want to hear that or not.
I think you could also slot him in behind Talen Green, Mateer, like that 5-7 range feels about right. And like I said, I'm pretty quarterback heavy on this list, Mike, but I could have gone, throwing like a CJ Allen, a KJ Bolden, like a couple Georgia defenders on a rebuild defense. Like Colin Simmons and Anthony Hill are awesome, but if one of those goes down, you're probably not knocking Texas national championship hopes as much as Arch Manning. So that's kind of why I was quarterback heavy with this list.
No, understandable. But hey, last thing we wanted to hit on here, Steven, the panic beater, because Steven's panicking, much like I was on last episode. But all this DJ Lagway stuff. Man, if he misses time, we just went 8-5. It was a breakout year, won our last four, due in large part to DJ Lagway's emergence. He didn't play against Texas. We were up against Georgia until he got injured. And then eventually, obviously, Georgia won out. But hell, had he played against Georgia the whole game, we'll never know. But Florida would have more than a puncher's chance. Again, they were beating Georgia when that happened. So I thought he played. He did have the interception against Tennessee, but he had one of the most impressive throws I've ever seen to get us into overtime. And Steven, I was watching. I went back and rewatched that game recently. I'm still shaking my head at old damn Billy Napier going for two. Called a timeout, kicking an extra point. He should never live these things down. But that's neither here nor there. What's your panic meter for what you're hearing about old DJ Lagway?
Is it too high to go with 8 out of 10 on the panic meter?
I don't know if that's high enough.
I was gonna say I could almost go 10 out of 10 here, and I hate to be I don't want to be a hot take artist and just like give you some over the top answer, but man, I'm worried. I mean, it's hard to get a straight answer on what exactly is going on there, and sort of the mystery, the I'm gonna say misdirection, if you will, how quiet things have been is typically not the best of signs. Now that could just be me just being Mr. Worried over here because he's on probably going to end up being on one of the Athlon covers, unlike Nico now. So I've had to change that one. But I mean, your whole season, if you're Florida, rests on the right arm of DJ Lagway. Like if Aiden Warner or Harrison Bailey or insert other quarterback starts 13 games, Florida's not a top 10 team. They're not a playoff contender. So I mean, I'm pretty panicked right now if I'm Florida.
Yeah, and just to be clear, Billy Napier on Saturday says he's and again, if you really got to rewatch. I mean, hell, I could play the clip, but it's so boring. Listen to Billy Napier, but it's out there. We played it on yesterday's show, and just type in Billy Napier. But really, I advise you to watch the clip. Don't just read the transcript. But it's just it's muddled with, you know, how's DJ on schedule. You know, like what the hell does that mean? You know what I mean? But he says he's coming back. He says he'll be fine. He'll be throwing. He doesn't give a date. He says a couple weeks. He said he'll be good. But again, they said he'd be good for spring, and he wasn't. You know, they said he's participating, but apparently he's handing the ball off. You know what I mean? So this is very, very muddled is kind of the best way I could say it. But people telling you that he's fine and he's ready to go, they either don't know what they're talking about or they're lying to you. So that's where we're at. We're still waiting and see here. But yeah, I think that's shout out. Someone had it in the comments here. You know, I think they're here it is, Cousin Frank. Four wins without Lagway, they go to the playoff with him. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, I think he's that damn good. I think again, I'm not saying they're going to the playoff with him, but I think they could compete for it, and they could be the surprise team in the SEC. And I don't even know if it would be a surprise because they got hot at the end of last year. But I don't think they stand a chance without DJ Lagway of doing anything of substance in the SEC.
If Graham Mertz was returning this year and he was the starting quarterback for Florida, do we think they would be a playoff team?
No.
I think with DJ Lagway, they're not going to do it. But I don't think there's a game on the Florida schedule where you would say that's an automatic loss. And it's like, I know that's I'm trying to be like not too hot take-ish here, but you get Texas at home. We saw how they played Georgia in the first half. Everything just opens up for Florida. Like the box that you get into with an Aiden Warner or Harrison Bailey or unnamed quarterback from the portal. I mean, at LSU, at Miami, Texas A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee are probably all losses if DJ Lagway is not playing this year. And that's not even taken into account like swing games. Like Florida State could just be better this year. South Florida is going to be one of the better G5 teams this year too. So I'm pretty panicked. And my panic meter went up after I read the USA Today story from Matt Hayes last week about Lagway's injury. Because it's been sort of a slow build for me. Is when you see players miss spring practice all the time, Mike, and it's like, oh, it's no big deal, I'll be back. And then just the fact it's been so hard to get intel, and some of the intel has been kind of concerning. And, you know, he's just handing the ball off in the spring game. There's something not adding up, and it's just very concerning to me.
Mm-hmm. And so what would be the panic meter, too? I wanted to ask you on Nico or Tennessee, not really Nico, but Tennessee without Nico, again, not knowing who they're going to add. But for all we know, Tennessee is going to strike out on any and all quarterbacks they go after. What's your level of panic for the Vols right now?
I think if Florida is an 8 or a 9, I would probably put Tennessee about a 7. I think if there is a saving bit here for Tennessee, the schedule's pretty favorable. I think Tennessee will be an underdog against Georgia, Alabama, Florida, but Oklahoma, Arkansas, those are in Vanderbilt's in Knoxville. So some of your tougher swing games are at home. and you get Syracuse in a neutral site in Atlanta. I think if the schedule was a lot harder, I'd be worried. But I think if Tennessee can just continue to do what they do on defense, and they've been getting better, you find a run game. There's some, I think, some reasons to be optimistic about the offensive line if it all comes together. That's a lot of ifs. But that schedule is pretty favorable for Tennessee, much, much more favorable than Florida's is.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steven, I'll just let you know, we're in mid-April here, as you know. But the fact that you are already hovering over and hitting that panic button with multiple SEC teams, that lets me know that you're already in season mode. And I can't wait to see who you're going to be panicked about come fall. You know what?
In mid-season form, my friend. Like I said, no holdouts, no transfer portal, no departures here. We're all college football 365 days a year.
Yeah. Hey, before we wrap this thing up, Stevie, can you give us an update? What's the latest on the anything you could share about the Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine?
Yeah, we are coming down the home stretch. Just a few weeks until this thing goes to print. So my personal panic meter, it's getting higher every day. Of course, the need to change a cover this weekend was not a welcome development. Nico was going to be on one of our SEC covers. So we've had to make some changes. But yeah, we are moving through. And in a few weeks, it'll be headed to the printer and on newsstands late May, early June.
Oh, great. Well, hey, as always, before you go, Stephen, can you remind the folks, where can they follow you? Where can they find your work?
You can read all my work up at athlonsports.com. And a little special thing here, Mike, best players in the transfer portal. I'm trying to keep a running list of like the top 15 to 20. So if you're an SEC fan wanting to know, Texas picked up Emmett Mosley, the receiver from Stanford earlier today. Trying to keep the best available options going up there. So athlonsports.com is where you can read all my work. At Athlon Steven over on Twitter. And you can also follow me over on Facebook and Instagram at StevenLCFB.
All right, Steven, thank you so much for joining us and dropping all this knowledge on us. Who knows? I mean, the portal will be open by the next time you get here. I have a feeling we're going to have our hands full breaking down all the moves that are coming potentially here in the SEC in the next week. You know what?
Oh, Mike, this has been a crazier start to the portal season than I could have imagined. So a little bit of anticipation, a little bit of dread about what happens from here, especially as we inch closer to deadline. But man, it's got the conversation going for some college football, doesn't it?
It certainly does. But hey, all right, for Steven and I, that's going to do it on this episode of the show. We'll be back tomorrow with Cousin Shane. And multiple interviews coming your way this week. So stay locked in. Like, share, all that really helps us out. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.